Boop.
Hey, Carrie, guess what?
What?
I made, we have a new show that we launched that some people don't even know about called Backpack Show After Dark.
Can we call it like a new show? We've done it twice and just because we felt like it at the time.
So. Well, yeah. I mean, it might not have legs. Who knows? But
it has no guests. Done. It's just us. So.
Right. Did you know?
By the end of the day, we give zero cares about keeping ourselves censored. So.
That is true. Look, Michelle's here, by the way. So glad you're out of wherever you were doing your thing. And Paul's here. I won't touch it. I'm sorry. Here's Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Oh, our project. You're not on wherever you usually are today, YouTube. Yeah, so we did a Backpack Show After Dark. We have a cool theme for that, too. Did you know that I made a new
Please
theme
don't.
Song?
Please don't do it. We're not. This isn't that one, so don't do that.
Okay.
Don't do that.
When I run my theme, Carrie, you might want to refresh because I have you as super slow lag right now. Your audio's okay. Great. Your video's not. Mm-hmm. So anyway, who do we have on our show today?
Well, why don't I refresh first and you talk about it?
Oh, hey, that's a good plan. Get out of here. Thanks. All right. So we have two really wonderful guests on the show today. One of these days, I'm going to say we have one really great guest and one so-so guest. I mean, how fun would that be? We have a school teacher and artist, Deanna Duncan, AV person, who is doing an incredible project called And the Song Played On. You're doing it just to bug me. And the Song
you
Played
came back
on
that side just to bug me.
And Deanna lives not that far from Cary, and so she also experienced the big Nashville tornado, and there's an incredible story about a flying piano.
Well, it didn't fly. That was actually part of the interesting thing, is that it's the one thing left standing.
Oh,
the
it
house
flew.
Around it was demolished.
No one knows, but it flew. And we also have Stacey Coleman today. We're going to talk about some really important stuff about fighting pit bull bans. She runs Animal Farm Foundation. We may or may not have a goat come in. There could be shenanigans.
Would love that.
Never really know. So we got a lot to cover today. Make sure, this is like Fight Club. If you don't say hi, we do not know that you are here. So just make sure you say hi. Oh, really quick. Paul, you said that you didn't see it up on YouTube. If you just go to cbrogan.me/BP live, I put you right there. So you never have to even know if you don't want to know. So just for anybody, we're on Twitch. You can come find us on Twitch if you want.
Hi,
and
Jane.
Hi, Jane. Welcome back from surgery. Holy cow, everybody, it's coming apart. I almost started with the wrong show music. we have a new song.
Because you're so in love with it, with your new one.
I am. I love it.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Every time I think about updating the opener, I think, but I really love Horacio and I really love Sister Anne. And
I know. Who would
I
we
love
swap
everybody.
Out?
I don't know. Who no
we
one.
Swap out?
Welcome to The Backpack Show, where we bring you insights about success from unusual places.
Yes, yes, we do.
And sometimes those unusual places are close to home. Like today, Deanna Duncan is actually an AV production teacher in the same county where my kids go to school.
So they both experienced the big tornado that happened last year right at the start of the pandemic, right before pre-pandemic.
Yes, they
hey, Leslie.
Did. Which if you're thinking, hey, what would complicate getting kids back to school after their school building was destroyed? Let's put them all in a school building like and cycle through in phases. A pandemic complicates that.
That maybe
in case you were
that
wondering,
up.
that is an issue.
So let's grab Deanna. We got to ask some questions. We got to understand a little bit about And the Song Played On. Hi there.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. And especially with an intro that has Sir Mix-a-Lot in it, that's like makes me feel special.
He was a real sweetheart. He's a really, really nice guy. In fact, I realized I haven't texted him in a little, so I should probably say hi and make sure he's still vertical.
Do it right now. We'll okay. wait. Yeah. No, it's cool. Finish your tweet. I'll just be here with Deanna.
So we got to hear about this project.
Yeah, tell us about the exhibit.
Yes. So we obviously experienced the tornadoes. And a few weeks after I got a text from a former student, and she and I have been working together throughout her college years. And she had been a teacher in Malaysia. And we did like a project together with her students, tying them to my students here in Wilson County for the Life in a Day kind of aspect. So we, my kids could work with her kids and see what the different cultures were like. And she also had been a partner with me, a student partner in a program I had at Wilson Central High School here in Wilson County called the Ambassadors. And I worked with students that were like quiet leaders. I taught them how to create community service projects. So I've been really close with her family, and I also had her sister in class at Wilson Central as well. But she contacted me, and I had kind of reached out. You know, I heard that her family had lost their home. They were in one of the neighborhoods that literally there was nothing, like just a few houses here and there.
Just sticks and rubble left.
Yes. And she said, my mom and I have been talking about it. And we really, that's her mom there at the piano. And she said, we have this piano and it's really literally the only thing that's left. Their house wasn't completely decimated, but they had to tear it down. And this piano was just left standing. And, you know, it's a really, really nice Yamaha Baby Grand. And her mom like just wanted to see it be something else.
Like with water damage and stuff. It wasn't like it was undamaged. It just was not broken.
Right. And so, you know, the electrical components in it, they were ruined, but you know, that could be repaired. But she just didn't have a vision for playing it again and it being like a part of her anymore, or part of the family anymore. She was really ready to let go of it. And I think that was what inspired me to want to do something that paid it forward, instead of just like, oh, hey, here's this really nice piano that we could put a little bit of money into and you know, somebody could play it again. The reason they reached out to me is because they kind of knew that I was in that mindset of paying it forward. And I said, I don't know what I'll do with it, but let's figure it out and let's get it.
Right. If you fix it, it's just a curiosity, but if you do more with it, it becomes like an interactive exhibit that remembers the event and
repurpose the meaning of it. And, you know, being this close to Music City, I mean, we all feel Wilson County feels like we're a part of Nashville anyway. Music tends to be like the first thing that you like go to. It's like an easy go to. Especially, you know, when you're talking about like getting your community involved again or raising money or awareness. And I wanted to go one step further than that. So I didn't want it just to be something that that played music or was used like for a fundraiser, but I wanted to redesign it. And instead of it being an outlet for somebody inputting, you know, these vibrations on wires, to actually have it have a voice and reflect the voices of the community.
So how'd you do that?
Like where it started. I, being a teacher, I know I have lots of resources and lots of really amazing creative people at my disposal. And
free labor. Get to work, kids.
And these kids can figure out things so much better than most of the adults I know. So I reached out to some other teachers in the community and asked if they would be willing to take this on with me. And we have an amazing STEM teacher here at Green Hill. He actually is our teacher of the year this year, Robert Brendos. And he jumped at the chance. I talked with him. I said, you know, I want to be able to, I want you all to figure out how to take a piano and make it not play music, make it play voices. And then me being an AV teacher, you know, I was like, my students and I can collect the voices and we can put them together. And I need you to make the piano the speaker, the device that holds the voices. And I also, I'm a former visual arts teacher and dance teacher. So I always like to incorporate as many of the arts as possible. So I also were, you know, reached out to our fine arts teachers, specifically the art teachers from West Wilson Middle and Stoner Creek Elementary, the two schools that we lost. So because their children, every single one of their children was affected, even if they didn't lose their home, they lost their school. And for an elementary and a middle school student, losing your school is just like losing your home.
Well, it felt like they weren't safe anymore. Like you try to teach your kids every night that the world's a safe place and their school gets literally demolished hours after they're in it. It's a little hard to sell that story.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think every single one of us in the county, you know, there was a moment the day after the tornadoes that we realized if this was at 1 in the afternoon and not 1 in the morning, like what would have happened? Like, where would we be right now? And so definitely, you know, you can find some silver linings in the power and the devastation of storms like that. But it definitely could have been worse. I mean, it definitely wasn't good, but it definitely could have been worse for our children. So
what kinds of things are you going to build into it? Like you mentioned voices, you mean actual songs, like performances that will play or testimonials from people or like what kinds of things?
Yeah, a lot of different facets. That's why I like to call it an interactive art installation, because we are going to be doing community outreach to get recorded stories from people about the tornado and then everything that's happened since then. And we want to concentrate, though, on not retelling, like reliving the nightmare of what happened, but I'm going to collect stories of, I put it into four categories, hope, healing, helping hands. And I can't think of the other one right now. Heroes. And because when you have catastrophic events, these heroes come out, helping hands come out, and people that you never have talked to before are all of a sudden willing to give you everything. So I want it to concentrate on that aspect of it. So this piano has been through like the trauma, and it's coming out, you know, like a rebirth on the other end of it. And I want the voices that the piano plays to also echo that sentiment. And then the fine arts aspect of it, I'm working with the art teachers from those two schools, and the art teachers here are going to be helping as well. But their students are, they're talking about, you know, creating art that has to deal with community. One of the teachers just shared with me yesterday, her students are painting the inside of the lid because that's going to be the open part of the speaker. And they have this design that they're working on that's like houses and buildings and rainbows. And then the other school's students, they're concentrating on art, word art. So they're going to be working with making art out of the words hope, heal, hero, and help. And that will decorate the outside of the piano. And then I'm also choreographing a dance with a dance teacher from Wilson Central High School. We've worked together for years and share the same like dance brain. She and I actually met about it last night. We're just so excited to get it going. And then the dance teacher here is working with one of our student choreographers, and they're actually gonna be dancing to a song that was composed for the tornado relief by a Nashville artist called This Too Shall Pass. And I reached out to the artist for that song. He was really excited for us to use the song for dance because when he wrote the song, he had the intent of playing it around town and raising money for tornado relief, and then the pandemic hit. So that song has not served its purpose either. So we're going to be making a dance to it in a video.
Wasn't it crazy? So we're devastated by this tornado, and then people turned out to help really quickly. A lot of volunteers from all over the country, and then the pandemic got serious, like almost within that same week. And so then that's it. It was like, well, good luck with everything. We've got to go home. And the school's still just there on the main drag, like a big pile of rocks. So.
It's just a daily reminder for like I don't know if anybody else has gotten used to driving past it, but every time I drive past it still hits me.
Yep, same. But that's a good thing actually, is that I don't hardly go anywhere, so I don't have to see it a lot. But you know, so where ultimately is it going to be displayed?
Originally originally I was thinking, oh, this would be fantastic. We'll take it out in the community. We'll, you know, have it on Lebanon Square. We'll put it, you know, over by Providence and Mount Juliet, and the community can gather around it and we can have performances. And so that'll probably take a while. So right now the plan is we will, when we finish the project, we'll have it here at Green Hill High School. And then we'll share it with some of the schools around the county. So it'll just visit school to school. So the students can experience it. And then hopefully soon enough, we'll have new structures for our West Wilson Middle and our Stony Creek students that we would be able to have it have a place at one of those locations, or still, you know, travel between the two. I would love for it to extend its purpose. Mm-hmm. And then after, you know, after the hope healing recovery has happened, then maybe the next set of students could take it and transform it into something else.
I thought it was so powerful. You took something that just this remnant of a really horrible thing that happened, but also a miracle that it survived at all, mm-hmm. and turned it into something that we can all appreciate.
Yes. Yeah. I remember when I first met with Jillian, she's my former student. We met over coffee, which was crazy because I think it was the first time either one of us had really been in anybody else's company in a few months when we met. Of course, you know, we were socially distanced and masked the whole time, but she was talking to me about that night. And one of the visuals that she had was, she said there were just like papers flying everywhere. She just woke up and then it was just like everything in the house was filled with papers. And she remembered thinking, where did all these papers come from? and that flurry of that really I was just like, it's just a surreal moment and made even more surreal. I think about that image a lot from her.
So I wanted to bring up part of your project. You have a part of the site, cbrogan.me/piano, is a quick link to get there, called Stories. And in it, you want to get stories along those themes of heroes, hope, help, healing, and recovery. Do you mean like right from the local hood, or do you mean like all over the world? Can people on the show come and record their stories?
I would love to for this to be to begin as a Wilson County community. If we could extend it, I mean, obviously we're not the only community that's been affected by a natural disaster. But when you're in it, you feel like you're the only one affected by it. Mm-hmm. I actually traveled because it happened right before spring break. I traveled to see my boyfriend in Hawaii 4 days after the tornado. And I remember when I got there, nobody knew about what had happened. And it was still so like raw and emotional and fresh with me. And I remember thinking like how uncaring everybody else seemed, even though they weren't. I mean, they were all like, oh my gosh, I didn't hear about that. That's like horrible. So I think that we need to concentrate first on our community and then hope that can inspire other people that have been through the same kind of effects to work within their community to share their voices.
Super. Deanna Duncan, stick with us if you can. We have a little bitty panel that comes at the end. I know you said you might have to run, though, because you're in the midst of school. So
no, it's actually
my students are busy editing a video right now, and they're being so good. I'm very proud.
Maybe just refresh while you're back there so that your connection resets.
Yeah, re-refresh your browser again. We'll stick around. We'll catch you up. Oops. I hit a button.
I didn't do it.
I'm so sorry.
I didn't do it.
We're going to grab Stacy in just a minute and a half. I just kind of forgot to do this. Hey, if you're an author, you could have your own author website. Oh, didn't I sound like so into it? Hey, if you're an author, you could have your own author website.
No, there should be some books based on, I mean, everybody has a story about what happened during the Nashville tornado here. So definitely some books should come out of it. And if you want to get a website up and you don't know how to do it, pub-site.com. It's really stupid easy. Go check it out. It's got a 14-day free trial. It's for authors. It's got all the things built in that an author would need to promote yourself in your book. So go check that out. 14-day free trial.
Hey, great news. You can make a show just like this one.
You're going to have to get your own AV production teacher who's building an art exhibit. Do it yourself.
Yes. cbrogan.me/streamyard. Hey, want some sausage? I bet yes. down on the farm they want some sausage. All you have to do is send an email, carrie@chrisbrogan.com.
You know who I bet would love some sausage? Our dogs.
Some pitbulls. Mm-hmm. Give a couple of those pitbulls some Johnsonville, the best sausage out there. We are literally sponsored by Johnsonville. Don't make a thing out of it.
I make a thing out of it. I'm excited.
Our podcast runs because of Castos.com. Castos is a cool little place you can host your podcast, as long as I say.
And some people are like, you need audio only, so we want Castos. And they're wonderful.
Say, do you want a .online domain? I sure do. So yeah. I have thebackpackshow.online. You could get one for 99 cents for the first year. cbrogan.me/online.
That code gets you 90%
off. 90% off. Use the code Chris.
We read all our answers. Fun URLs.
I want to talk about dogs. I want to talk about the good and the sad about this project.
We could talk about how it brings people together and fights discrimination, you know, by bringing dogs and animals, dogs and people together to fight discrimination.
You could bring dogs and animals together.
I know. There's other types
of animals. Giraffes like dogs.
It is Animal Farm Foundation. Animal Farm had all types of animals. Bet there's some cats involved.
Not if I can help it. Stacey, you probably have read about these things that cheetahs need service animals. Have you seen this? That cheetahs have like their own service dogs to keep them from being less anxious?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I'm not surprised. You know, we all need support now and then. So
we do.
Even the cheetahs. But how does the dog ever keep up? The cheetah's the fastest land animal. The dog must be like, stop it. Slow down.
These are captive cheetahs, it turns out. So look at this beautiful creature. Aww. We have Animal Farm Foundation, which is for a super important thing. Right on the cover of it, it tells us, you know, help fight pit bull bans. Stacey, talk a little bit about the project.
Sure. So we've been around for a while doing a lot of things focused on fighting discrimination that people experience when they own dogs labeled pit bull. And we think about that sort of discrimination as a dog issue, but it actually becomes a social justice issue when folks are losing their homes because of what their dog looks like. In some towns, it's still legal for the government to come in and take your pet dog out of your house just because of what it looks like. So people lose their pets, they can't find housing, they can't get insurance. They are discriminated against in a lot of different ways just because of what their dog looks like.
I've had experience with that particular breed. My uncle, my cousin, sorry, Mark, had one named Wide Track, and she was one of the most loving creatures I ever found. And, you know, I feel like people who know and appreciate the breed tend to have that, they lead with that as often as they can, it seems like, you know, no, very loving. But to your point, I mean, it's also a tool, just like marijuana has been for so many years, a tool for discriminating against certain races. This particular breed has a massive amount of systemic racism tied to it. I want to hear a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. And that's really at the heart of the work that we do. To back up just a little bit, one of the things that's happened in the last 20 years is the mapping of the canine genome has occurred. It happened. We now know how dog DNA works. And one of the things that we learned is that the things we thought we could predict about a dog's behavior by what it looked like or by its pedigree, it just isn't so. So for example, what is one of the most stereotypical characteristics of a dog labeled pit bull is their big head, right? So we learned that in the canine genome, there are there's more than 20,000 genes, but only about 50 of those genes determine a dog's head shape. And of those 50 genes, none of them influence behavior. So we've got the science to back this up now. So all of these stereotypes that we thought we knew about the dogs just have gone out the window. Some people still hold on to them for a lot of different reasons. They enjoy being fearful. Or, like Chris just said, they use it as a way to segregate a population of folks that they think owns these particular dogs. And that's one of the things that we fight against. I started doing this when I lived in Indianapolis. I had picked up this little stray dog off the side of the road. I was, you know, driving and going for lunch, and this little black dog was running down the sidewalk and was chasing after somebody who had a bag full of fast food. And the dog was jumping up and trying to grab the fast food. And the guy looked terrified, and he turned around and he was getting ready to kick the dog. So I threw my passenger door open. No, I was on the driver's side. I threw my driver's door open and yelled, "Little dog, what are you doing?" And she turned and looked at me and she ran just full gallop, leapt over me in my seat, hit the passenger seat, jumped to the back, and just sat there and smiled. And I looked back and I thought, that's a pit bull. Uh-oh, that's a pit bull. I think I'm supposed to be afraid of those. Why am I supposed to be afraid of those? Think. In the meantime, the dog's just sitting in the back, you know, wagon.
Minding its own business.
It's like, hey, what are we doing? Let's go get some fast food. And I had convinced myself I had to carefully extricate myself from the car or else the dog was going to get me. And I was thinking, wait a minute, why do I think that? Why have I been taught that? And so I studied the dog for a little while and I think, you know what? No, this dog seems okay. So I call the Humane Society and said, do you pick up? I'm in the middle of work, but this dog needs a place to go. And the Humane Society said, yeah, we'll come and get the dog. And then the next day I was feeling, you know, I should do something because I sent this dog to a nonprofit, right? So I call the Humane Society and I said, I want to pay for whatever that dog needs. And they said, well, we're going to euthanize the dog because it's an unspayed pit bull. And I said, here's the money to spay the dog. And you're really going to have to explain the other thing to me because I don't get it. And they said, it's just what we do with pit bulls. And I said, okay, so I lied. It's my dog and I want my dog back. And they said, no, you can't have it. And my friends were like, why are you doing this? And I said, I don't know. I just feel like I have to. But I ended up getting an attorney so I could get that dog out of the Humane Society.
Because you had to jailbreak this dog.
I did. I had contacts on the inside that were giving me pictures, telling me what the dog was doing and if she was getting medical treatment. Anyway, it's a long story, but so this dog came and lived at my house. And for the first 2 weeks I sat and I looked at her waiting for her to do whatever it is pit bull dogs do that is so scary. And she didn't really even get off the couch very much. In the first 24 hours, she learned that it's not acceptable to stand on the cat. Because she really wanted to smell. She wanted to
in Chris's house, it would be.
Yeah.
Come get her.
So I was able to, she would put her paw on the cat and hold it still so she could smell it. And we're like, no, we think that's rude in this house, so we don't do it.
I want to toy with you. Stay.
Anyway, so she joined my family and it was fine. And she was a great pet. And then a couple of years later, the mayor of Indianapolis announced he was going to round up and kill all the pit bull dogs because there had been a terrible incident and somebody was injured. And I said, you know what? Not me and not my dog, because we didn't do it. Yes, what happened to that child is terrible and it shouldn't have happened. And those people need to be responsible. But I didn't do it and my dog didn't do it. So we're not going to be the ones to pay the price for this. So we got organized and we took on the city council. And this was in, I think, 2006 at a time where nobody was winning against pit bull bans that were introduced in their cities, but we won. And then we won again the next year. But I can't tell you how many times during that period, which is getting back to the point of why we started this long story, how many times the people said to me on the council, we're not trying to take your dog away. We're not focusing.
Right. Secret code for racism. Like, right. You know, you're a nice, pretty white lady. We're taking these other people's dogs.
Right. We're not targeting you. So, which is infuriating. Absolutely infuriating. So as we, I was offered the job out here to work with the foundation because that's what we do. And repeatedly, again and again, every time we go in to fight breed-specific legislation somewhere, eventually, if the city council has not listened to science and logic, eventually the racists out themselves, or the classists, could be either one. We are, one of the things we do is we fund federal district court cases for dog owners in cities where they are getting their dogs taken away. So we currently have three filed in federal district court, two in Iowa and one in North Dakota. And this just happened like 2 weeks ago. One of the mayors, the mayor of Council Bluffs, actually went on the public radio station and said, we're going to keep this ban because we don't want those people in our community.
Those people.
Those people.
Coach Woodard says, I live in a community that bans dogs historically viewed as aggressive. German Shepherds, Pit Bulls, Rottweilers, Dobermans, etc. It would be interesting to share the Canine Genome Project.
Well, you know what? We have a resource on our website that I call Genetics for the Rest of Us, because it's not like I understand the canine genome. I know people who understand the canine genome, and then they just explain it to me. But we have an infographic that actually explains exactly how dog DNA mixes together. You get 50% from the mom and 50% from the dad always, but how that mixes together, we don't know. And if a dog is from outside of a closed and coherent gene pool, all bets are off. We just don't know what the dog is going to be.
You know how it mixes together so that when the dog does something bad, if it's the mom that notices, the mom is like, your son just did this thing. That's how it works in our house.
That's
anyway.
How it works.
Yeah.
You know, Stacey, as you were talking about this, and you were talking about the bans on dogs that are, you know, historically. Yeah. Well, in sixth grade, this is how jarring this is to my memories, you know, as a kid. In sixth grade, this kid beside me, Matt Stacey, got his face ripped off quite literally by a husky. And, you know, no one's out to ban any huskies, right? Because who owns huskies? You know, upper class people, fancy people, mm-hmm. predominantly white people own huskies. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine, you know, and when I saw Coach Woodard say shepherds, I mean, I get it. Shepherds are taught to be, you know, military animals because they're so smart. But I can't imagine banning on a particular breed. So there's so much important pit bull stuff. But I have to tell you what I did. I was clicking around on your website. And I accidentally found your like cows and dogs.
We also, yeah.
I'm really sorry because I want to talk about these important like racial inequality. But it's like, oh, look, cows and other animals. What's going on over there?
Do you ever blow dry them and make them fluffy?
Well, those three right there, they would probably let us. I would imagine they would be the cows that let us put silly hats on them. But so we are located on a 350-some acre farm in upstate New York. So we have a lot of pasture space because it used to be a horse farm. And we put that space to use housing sanctuary animals. So I think we currently have, gosh, maybe 9 or 10 cows. And I don't even know how many horses, maybe about the same number of horses. But when they come here, they just get to live out their lives. They don't have to work anymore. They just get to be themselves.
All right, so I'll transition to important things again, even though I really like the cows.
I think cows are important, too.
I like the cows.
Service dogs. Talk about this. This is a beautiful project.
Well, we wanted to set out to prove in our work. Okay, so there's so much negative imagery about pit bull dogs, right? So we've all heard so many stories about, you know, it's when that's the dog that bites, that's the dog that makes the news, right? So we wanted to come back at that with some positive images and positive stories. And one of the things we set out to do is we wanted to prove that dogs labeled pit bull in shelters could do the same work normally reserved for purebred, purpose-bred dogs. So what we have done is found dogs inside shelters with the label pit bull, and we don't DNA test them. We have no idea what they are, but we know that they got the label pit bull by the shelter, so now they've got the stigma, right? So if they're a good fit for our program, and that means that they enjoy the work, because we don't want our dogs to actually feel like they're working. We want them to be a dog that's super affiliative with people, that mm-hmm. enjoys playing games regularly, because that's really what service work is you perform a task and then you get a reward. So our dogs seem to really enjoy it too. And what we really, cows' lives matter, yes. Anyway, so I'm sorry, I got distracted. That's wonderful. So what we really wanted to do was put these dogs into the community and show people that the dogs are just dogs. They're just individuals and they can do the same thing all other dogs do. Dogs have much more in common with each other than they have differences.
So I have to go, but I have to like put the highlighter on this because you keep saying with the label pit bull, with the label pit bull, with the quote. It's like the artist formerly known as Prince. We're saying this because the dog has a squarish head, a lower squattish body, certain width between the eyes or something. Is that why? Like because there's so many other traits, it could be boxer. How would we know? That kind of a thing. Is that why we keep saying with the label pit bull?
Well, when we talk
mixes,
about
right.
Well, because I feel like you're saying to me something about activism and I'm not smart enough to get it. So I just want to hear the part I'm not getting.
It's less about activism and more about accuracy. So there are so many different opinions, legally, genetically, breed club. There are a lot of different definitions for what a pit bull is or isn't, and very few of them agree. So we don't claim to know what a pit bull is. We just know that if a dog has that label, it might have a stigma too. And so we want to work hard to fight that stigma so that all the people with these dogs get a fair shake and they don't get their dogs taken away and they don't get targeted in their community. So when I say pit bull in quotes, air quotes, that's because we don't really know. There is no breed pit bull. There are like American Pit Bull Terriers, American Staffordshire Terriers, and some breeds of dogs that people assume are pit bulls. But again, there's no standard definition. So especially when it comes to mixed breed dogs, we know, science has told us, that we are terrible at visually identifying breed of mixed breed dogs, even some purebred dogs, but we're abysmal at doing it.
I still think all white guys look alike, so I'm never going to be able to get dogs straight. Forget it.
Right. So there was some research done that had, we wanted to prove this, that even people who are veterinarians and dog control officers and people who work in shelters, we gave them all this array of photos of dogs that are mixed breeds that we knew what they were. And 75% of the time, they were completely wrong and got none of the breeds correct in the mixed breed dogs. And of those, when you break it out, like if you break up, put it into groups of four, they don't even agree with each other. So three out of four had completely different guesses, and none of them were right.
But those guesses could result in the dog being killed.
Absolutely. Or the government just coming in and taking it away.
Oh, well, it's better than where I was going with it. Mentally, I was thinking that it was just sort of like, you know, remember how they killed off the idea that there was such a thing as a brontosaurus? And like, you know, suddenly you couldn't like your childhood favorite dinosaur.
Thanks for ruining
that. That would be cruel.
Yeah. Well, it turns out, according to National Geographic, it's back on the menu. It turns out there was one that they could call a brontosaurus, but for a while they were just calling anything that looked kind of like that a brontosaurus. So this is a million-year-old problem you're solving. Right now.
You also donate dogs to the canine programs, like for law enforcement, right?
We do. Our dogs are, we've suspended the program right now with the pandemic, but what we've done is we wanted to turn the notion of law enforcement dogs on its head, because it's kind of a scary idea, right? Plus, we also wanted to prove that there are dogs in shelters that are just as talented at finding drugs, narcotics, as those very expensive dogs that the same governments that take your dog away spend $30,000 on to import from Belgium to be a narcotics dog. And then the handlers that have these dogs are people who have a connection to their community, and the dog really serves as a more of a social lubricant to talk about drugs than it does actually do police work. All of our dogs find the things that they're supposed to be finding. But we have found that it opens up a communication line for the officers, and especially the kids.
So there's a lot there. There's a lot to cover. And I think that people really just need to go to animalfarmfoundation.org. By the way, I was pawing through. I didn't mean to make that pun. I really did it. I was pawing through all the articles, and you know, there's a wealth of stuff in there. How to explain to your landlord what their liabilities are. Because sometimes the landlord will say, well, if the dog, you know, bites somebody and they're in my place, I'm in trouble. You're like, well, maybe not so much.
Probably not. No. Case law says no.
So Case Law says no. It feels like that would be a great t-shirt.
Case Law says no. Not today, Case Law.
I'm gonna grab Deanna and bring Deanna back, because I think we should have a little powwow amongst us. Hi, Deanna.
Hello.
You put her back before? On her side. I knew it. I was just waiting. Right. Deanna, you've had a pit bull before. So it's funny how alchemy sort of emerges.
I actually was just like looking on my phone, trying to pull up a picture of her. And yeah, she was a rescue at Metro Animal Control here in Nashville. And a friend of mine saw her just like cowering in freezing rain. She had no hair. She was pink, like bright, bright pink. And every part of her was just wrinkled, almost like a Shar Pei. She like literally broke in and put a dog glue and a blanket in and called me, got the dog. And we were going to foster, and she was with us for, you know, the next almost 10 years.
They call that a failed foster, but isn't that like the best ever foster?
That's the best. Yeah. And she was absolutely amazing. My kids were, you know, 6 and 8, I believe, when we got her. And I did have friends and family that were like, I can't believe you're getting a pit bull. And, you know, do you trust her with your kids? And she was my son's best friend from the instant that they met until the day that we sat by her side. Like, she was his partner. And one of the most loving, incredible dogs I've ever owned.
Hey, how's your class going, by the way? I was thinking of you.
Awesome. They are all just sitting and being very good, very good students.
Wow.
Yeah, I went out to talk to them and they were like, we're good. So,
because I could tell you what would happen if I turned my back. I'd be like, rah!
Well, I am like, I can see them right above my computer, like have a window onto the classroom.
So oh, good. So you're eyeballing them. I gotcha.
Yes.
Oh, puppy.
So can I tell you a quick story about, since Deanna shared the story about her children, her son and the dog, I want to tell you a story about my dog Gertie, because I did keep, she left the one that I picked up off the street. She lived with me for 15 years until she died of old age. And, you know, I had all kinds of fosters and things, animals that came through, and she was always very motherly to them. But I took in right after 9/11, I was struggling for what I could do to help. And I lived in Indiana, I was, you know, far away from everything. So I signed up for a refugee resettlement volunteer program. And I was assigned a family from Afghanistan with 5 little kids, all with PTSD. And almost immediately the mother became quite sick and had to go to the hospital. So they were going to put the kids in foster care, but I said, you know, I'll take them. So I took custody of these 5 kids. We shared no language. They all have PTSD. They're not used to having animals in their house. I've got 6 cats and 3 dogs. The littlest one comes in, he's 5, and he's just crying, and he's crying, and he's crying, and he's crying, and I'm crying because I don't know what to do. He sits down cross-legged on the floor, and my dog Gertie just backed up in there and plopped down on his lap, and he put his little arms around her and put his head on her back, and that was the first time he stopped crying. And so then I knew that when that little boy was sad and couldn't handle all this that he's experienced, I'd just send the dog in to lay with him. And that's what he needed.
Oh, that is incredibly sweet.
I found Pickles.
Oh, Pickles. What's Pickles wearing?
Is that like a tutu?
What else would you wearing?
So.
Yeah, one thing to keep people from being afraid of your pit bull is to put them in a pink tutu.
The tutu's like, really? I'm going to go in a pit bull. And then the dog is like, all right, I guess so, I'm here for it.
I'll show a non-pit bull version of, I'm trying to get Stacey's good side here.
She had labeled, pit bull labeled.
Labeled.
We need like head bonkers that just have quotes. I'm like.
So I will, I'll show a little quick piece of a video. This is from a girl with a service dog. She has Asperger's, and self-harm is part of her Asperger's. When she has a bit of a meltdown, she hits herself. So this dog gets himself or herself into the girl's space, so she'll stop hitting. When she starts hitting, the dog jumps in and knows how to kind of, let me take care of the hand for you there. And she kind of says, maybe you can hug me instead, because I sure could use some hugging. And I've seen a bunch of similar-ish content like that, where it's basically teaching an animal how to interrupt a problem like that. So every one of your dogs is capable of that. Every you know, everything at that farm and sanctuary, that. So it's pretty cool. Plus, it's kind of nice to know that, you know, even animals often know what we need before we do sometimes. So it's pretty important. Mm-hmm.
Deanna, did you see the cows? They have cows and stuff. Because Deanna, you have goats too, right?
Yes.
That's one cool thing about living in the area we live in Tennessee, is that people have like goats and sheep and horses, like just out in their yard. For me, I mean, I was a little girl like wanting horses and having a tiny little postage stamp yard on Cape Cod. We were not going to have horses, but this is cool living here. I love seeing animals just out in the yard.
Jeremy's asking for the URL. Well, it's a YouTube URL, so it looks like, you know, vomit. But if you just type in, type in girl self-harm service dogs, you'll see it. It's that one happens to be for the Dr. Drew show, and not that I necessarily want to give him any credit.
Dr. Drew, I don't know.
One of our dogs does interrupt physical motions that one of the psychiatric service dogs, when their person starts getting overwhelmed, they have a motion they start doing with their hands, and the dog knows instinctively what it is and just inserts himself in there to stop that from escalating into what comes next for her.
That's good. That's a beautiful thing. All right, we are at a different. The dogs are, well, they're more important than humans a lot of times. If they had opposable thumbs, it would be all over for us. Well, it is that time right now.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
Oh, I'm looking around. Oh, you know, actually, I'll tell you what. I'll give it to Paul because he even jumped platforms. He, you know, went from LinkedIn Live all the way over to YouTube to hang out. So that's commitment.
Journey. Yeah.
That's commitment. I was thinking about giving person of the day to the coach, but
yeah, coach is like, take me out of contention. He's been person of the day so many times. We'll have to make him like a velvet smoking jacket with a patch on it, like in honor of his.
He's been person of the day so many times. So we have one question we ask every single guest, and it is the question of what goes in your backpack. Now, this can be one physical thing, or it could be one metaphorical thing. So you could say something important like a chew toy for an animal. It could be a piano key. Or it could be something metaphorical like hope or clarity. So it's whatever you want. Carrie, what are some of your favorites from the past? What's a good physical one?
Extra set of teeth. Still.
An extra set of teeth.
Yep. Or a book you hate because eventually you'll read it and learn something from it.
And how about a metaphorical one?
Kindness.
Oh, one day we'll have a little banner that runs across the bottom
line. And pride. I quite liked Pride. We had an actor on, Horacio Garcia Rojas, was in a Netflix series, like a sort of a horror comedy series, and I loved it, called Diablero. And he said pride, like in where you come from. So he's an actor on the world stage, but he's from Mexico City, and that's part of his identity. So that was interesting too. I love that too.
So Deanna Duncan, what goes in your backpack?
Mine is actually, I guess, metaphorical and physical.
Okay.
I guess it's been 6 years ago now. My father died suddenly, and we were very close. And when I got the phone call that he had passed, the night before, it was kind of late. It was like 10:30 at night. He had been texting me, and he had just gotten a smartphone like a few months before he passed away. So he was getting better at texting. He was texting me, asking me about some paperwork that I was scanning for his best friend, who was concerned about his health and wanted to be sure that, you know, these things were done for him. And, you know, he apologized for texting so late, but he also was checking in because at that time I was doing a benefit for a dog shelter, Old Friends Dog Sanctuary here in Mount Juliet, Tennessee. And we had painted sculptures of different breeds of dogs and auctioned them. And so he said, hey, I, you know, do you know how much your sculpture is going for? And I said, you know, I think it's up to like $600 right now. So I'm super excited about that. I hope it goes for more. And he made like a sweet comment about, you know, well, it's worth more because of who made it. and then when we finished with our text conversation, I always would text him, I love you. And he would text me back the word ditto. And so he texted me back, ditto. I closed my phone. I turned to my husband at the time. We've since been divorced, but are best friends. And I said, what will we do without him? And he said, I don't know. And apparently just moments later, we lost him. So when I got to his house the next morning, you know, we were all in shock. But they had already taken him away, and the rest of my family was there. And my brother had his cell phone. And my first inclination was to take his cell phone. And the last thing he said to anyone on this earth was that he loved me. So I got it tattooed on my wrist.
Oh, I love it.
That's my physical reminder of the metaphor for don't take anyone's love for granted. Always leave someone you love with the message that you love them. And I try to stand by that. I probably say it more than a lot of people want to hear, but I don't let somebody I love leave my company without them knowing it.
It's a good way to be.
That's beautiful. Stacy.
Stacy, I think you should figure, you know, just say like a pack of crackers.
How do I follow that?
A joint.
Joint. Good
well,
gummy.
No, that was a beautiful story, and I'm glad that you shared that with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I take rumination to like Olympic level. So ever since I knew I was going to be on this show, I've been trying to figure out what I would take in my backpack. And I finally decided this morning, but I came down to two different things. So I hope I can have two things in my backpack.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
Is one of them a cow? Better be a cow.
No, if a cow's coming with me, the cow's carrying the backpack, not me.
I like your plan.
So the first is my poker face. And I need that because as a woman who is assumed to be emotional, who deals with lots of legislators and politicians and so on and so forth, who has an intelligent message to give, I have to have a poker face because you never let them see a sweat, because some of your more formidable foes will use that against you. So first, I must have my poker face.
Okay.
Second of all, I want to take that lawyer cat video with me. You know, the one that made the rounds? I still laugh at that. I have seen it, I don't know how many times, and I still just lose it. So I want the lawyer cat video in my backpack too.
I feel so bad for that sad, sad kitty. He's like, you can see the filter. He's really sad. He's like, oh, I'm prepared to go ahead with it. Like, he's so sad.
He goes, I'm not a cat. And somebody who lawyers all the time, I say, I think we should stipulate that, yes, in fact, you are a cat.
Yeah, like anybody was going to be like, R2. R2, R2, R2. I object.
Oh, my gosh. So I have a story about my grandmother that deals with animals, which is that she had a very bad habit. She's French-Canadian, and she had a very interesting bad habit of pointing at everything. Point, point, point. My Aunt Jane raised horses, dressage horses, and I will tell you that between that, a bull mastiff, and several other large creatures, my Grammy had a habit of pointing her finger when their teeth were nearby.